Corinne Bailey Ray, and put your records on before that razor lighting in the morning. It's 11 minutes past five.
105 Drive with Tim Willett.
And we're joined in the studio today by a guest. We are joined by, well, we're joined by a doctor. I haven't had a doctor in here before. Hello, Dr. Chris.
Hi, Tim.
Should we call you Dr. Chris or should we call you by your nickname?
You can call me Chris or Tigger, but I'm not on duty at the moment, so... Okay.
So I don't have to call you Doctor?
No.
I quite like calling you Doctor, though. It makes me feel like I've got somebody important in the studio with me.
Oh, God forbid.
No? Okay, so let's go on to the nickname then, because you have a nickname, Tigger. How did the Tigger nickname come about?
Oh, well, my surname's Target, so at school both my sister and I were called Tiggy, and then I was a high jumper at school. And so that and the bounce and the general being phenomenally loud, the Tigger name sort of just stuck.
Okay.
And it's been with me ever since.
So you're both called Tigger?
We were both called Tiggy.
Right.
When we were young, and then she wasn't quite as bouncy as me, so she lost it, but for me it stuck and became Tigger.
Okay. That's interesting. So you are here because you're about to embark on a trip around the world on a motorbike for various different medical charities.
I am.
And you're heading off beginning of next year?
End of January. I'm just waiting to do a couple of job interviews, so I will have some employment to come back to as I've given up my job to
very
do
smart,
this.
Very smart.
And I leave in late January and I'm doing a 21,000-mile trip for MagPass, who are our local air ambulance charity, and Riders for Health, who provide motorcycles for medical staff to get to remote African villages.
Okay. So is there a reason why you decided to A, do this in the first place, and B, why you've... I mean, anybody can raise money, and you've decided, obviously, to do this in a rather large way by spending such a long time and travelling a long distance. So first of all, why did you decide to do this and why did you decide to do what you are doing?
Well, ever since a friend at college had a motorbike, and I just instantly became obsessed with it, and I've just been riding ever since. The thought of doing a big trip completely predates Charlie and Ewan doing their ones on the TV.
Yep.
They slightly stole my thunder.
Okay.
But I forgive them for it. I just wanted to go out there and just see the world, because I'm not all that well-travelled a person, and wanted to do something, you know, for the good whilst I'm doing it.
Okay. So you love motorbikes, as you say. Do you think you're going to love motorbikes when you come back? Or do you think you need a bit of a break?
No, I will never cease to love motorbikes.
No?
I wasn't able to ride for a couple of years because of a back injury.
Okay.
And every time I saw a bike go past me, I was, you know, close to tears. I love it. It's my number one drug.
Okay. So why are you raising money in the first place? Am I right in saying there's a bit of a story behind you that links you to one of these charities that you're raising money for?
Well, the first link is motorcycles and doctoring and anything that combines the two. It's only for the love of God that I have never had a major accident and have never needed the air ambulance brought out to me. But my partner wasn't so lucky, and she was involved in a car crash and she was young, and her life was actually saved by MagPass doctors. And so as soon as I found that out, then there could be no other charity that I wanted to raise money for. But the only charity I could think of that just involves nothing but motorcycles and medicine is Riders for Health, who provide not just motorcycles but all the logistics to get healthcare workers to the remote villages where there is no healthcare. People can't journey, well, they'd have to journey for days and days by foot to get to a hospital where they might not get any care anyway. And so it was nice, it felt right to do something local, but something for outside the UK as well.
Okay. So how long does it take you to decide to come up with this route and organise this whole trip?
Well, I wanted to do something big, and I thought, where would I like to go? And so I wrote down a list of all the places I'd like to go, and then just join the dots. And all of a sudden, I'm doing the length of Africa, flying over to Nepal, and coming all the way back over land via Pakistan, Iran, and all the topically exciting places.
Mm. That was deliberately you chose those places.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because they're a bit risky.
If people are going to, you know, everyone's short of money at the moment. If people are going to cough up a few hard-earned quid for charity, one, the cause has got to be worth it, which these two are beyond doubt worthy causes. But if someone's going to raise money for charity, you want them to be putting in some effort. You want to do something exceptional that's going to stand out.
You don't want to see you cycling through LA or somewhere like that. You want to cycle through deserts and somewhere where you might potentially be in danger.
It's not my place to say whether LA is more dangerous than
well,
the Sudan.
Maybe it is, but it's not as glamorous, that's for sure.
Certainly not. And so I thought I'd just do as big and as dangerous and as exciting a trip as I could. If I don't do it now, God knows if I'll ever do it. There'll be things like houses and babies and mortgages to do. And from a career point of view, I was able to take the time off work at this sort of juncture between grades. So I thought, let's do it.
Okay. So, talk us through the route again in a little bit more detail. So you're flying to...
Well, I start off, I'm going to start at the air ambulance base for Magpass.
Oh, okay.
And then going to blast across Europe, because Europe's on my doorstep. I don't need to... Right. You know, I can see Europe at any point.
Yep.
Then I take the ferry from Venice, which sounds all very glamorous, over to Alexandria in Egypt, follow the Nile all the way down into Sudan, then through Ethiopia, Kenya... Oh, you're pushing my geography now. Tanzania, Malawi, Mozambique, Swaziland, South Africa, where some very nice people who I've got in contact with are going to help fly me to Nepal, to Kathmandu, and then through into India, through the Himalayas, so which will make a nice change, because I imagine I would have been a little warm-up till then, so I'll get to freeze my bum off in the several thousand feet. Then into Pakistan, then into Iran, just about 40 miles south of the Afghan border. So again, keeping the excitement up. And then home through Turkey, Greece, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Romania, and then just scooch off. There's a few bits in the journey that have sort of loops in them where I'm not straight lining the countries. So if I'm running a bit late, I can. But I just sat down on a weekend with Google Maps and all the places I thought would be cool to see, and there I've got it, 21,000 miles.
Yeah. So have you got any potential issues with access? Because you mentioned this bike ride that Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor, was it, that they did that as a television show. And there have been other programs that have tried to go around the world. There was something called a Children in Need show, I think, at the end of last year. They were going around the world and they had problems getting into different countries and access. Are you going to have any problems accessing some of these countries?
I'm bound to. How could you not?
And do you have contingency plans if you can't? Is it all going to go wrong? Do you have to go back hundreds of miles back in the other direction to go somewhere else?
It depends where it goes wrong.
Right.
I suppose. There's places where you've... the route... The way I'm... Originally, the route was to... go backwards from the way I'm doing it now, but things like it's much easier to get into Sudan from Egypt than it is from Ethiopia, so that's the reason why I'm doing it this way round. A lot of the visas you can only get a number of weeks in advance, so you have to get them, go to the embassies whilst you're en route doing it, so that makes it a bit more complicated.
Okay.
None of the visas you can get more than 3 months in advance. You've got to be invited by a resident in a lot of the countries. Now, I've got a very wide selection of friends, but I don't have, you know, always
you have to make
got...
some new friends then.
If anyone does live in Iran and they would like to invite me, I would very much appreciate it.
We've got a worldwide audience here. I'm not sure we've got anybody from Iran, but you know, never
know. Being a doctor helps because you work with people who are trained all over the world.
Yep.
So I've hopefully I've got a friend who's Pakistani will be meeting me out in Pakistan and will get my invite for there.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is going to be hoping I don't look too suspicious and cross my fingers and smile and nod.
And you are doing this completely on your own?
Well, that's the difference between myself and the wonderful Mr. Borman and Ewan McGregor, because they had, if you've watched them on telly, they had a plethora of staff arranging it. They had two Land Rovers or whatever it was, Land Cruisers, following them around.
Yeah.
I'm just one guy, no support, just me and 21,000 miles to go. So if it all goes peak-tong, there's no one to blame or get me out of it but me.
So have you presumably you've got a way of getting in touch with anybody, emergency number or phone or something?
I was hoping just...
you can get the signal.
Well, I was going to look into the sky and shout for Thunderbirds if it all goes very wrong. I'm yet to sort out exactly how I'm going to sort of manage the communications, because I'm hoping to help enable people to follow me and have some blogs going on various different websites. So I'm going to need to phone people up, tell them what's happening, get the photos back somehow. I don't know how, whether I'm going to look a lot more suspicious in certain not-to-be-named areas of the world going in with sat phone and loads of communications. Mm. So, you know, it's difficult, so I don't know.
Okay. We'll come on to talk about your bike and all the other bits and pieces that you might need to take with you, etc., for such a long journey. We'll do that after we've played a record. But you brought the bike with you. We're going to take some pictures of it, and we're going to put them on our Facebook page so that listeners can see. But am I right in saying that your bike is bright orange?
It is bright orange, so as any Tigger's bike should be.
Not going to be missed when you're riding around all these different places, are you?
I don't know. If I'm in a very orange, sandy sort of place,
in the desert, perhaps, yeah.
It's too bright. I'd like to see if nature could produce something quite so bright orange, except in the coral reef. So, no, I will tend to stand out and attract lots of trouble.
Okay, well, fingers crossed you don't. Anyway, it's a fascinating subject. We're going to come back and talk more to Chris after we played a record and done the travel news. Stay tuned, this is Cambridge 105.
105 Drive with Tim Willard.
Tim Willard.
You do know Come Down With Me has just started.
Cambridge 105.
Okay, so we're back with our guest today, Chris. Dr. Chris Tigger, whatever we're going to call him. And he is embarking on a round-the-world trip on his motorbike for medical charities. Now, your bike is not just any old bike. It's got a name. What is his name?
He is called Sir Humphrey Bickleby.
Right, Sir Humphrey Bickleby.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just told me the reason why you called him that off the air. Tell our listeners how that name came to be.
Well, I don't know if your listeners are going to make me feel quite as old as you just did by saying
not,
that you're too young to remember watching Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister.
No.
But there was a character in that played by Nigel Hawthorne, the late great Nigel Hawthorne, and of whom I'm a massive fan. And I just wanted something a bit different, and he's got a regal quality about him, my bike. So Sir Humphrey Bickleby is his name.
Is he prepared for this long journey? Does he know what's in store?
Well, I've had my hands in his innards for a number of weeks now, so I think he's getting there, slowly but surely. Now, I've had to make quite a few modifications, not just the luggage capacity, but he's got huge, great fuel tanks on him now, lots of extra protective equipment so he doesn't get damaged when he's going over rocks and sand and various other bits and pieces, sat navs, mount for my little Tigger to sit on the handlebars and talk to me.
Yep.
A lot of stuff, and I get my hands very dirty. I changed the tyre for the first time today, just in case I have to do it in the middle of Sudan and there's no one to help. So I'll be carrying spare inner tubes, and so I can hopefully do that at the side of the road if I have to.
So you think you've covered most eventualities in terms of something going wrong with a bike?
The foreseen eventualities, yeah, it's the unforeseen is why I'm doing the trip, because that's what's going to make it exciting, and that's what's going to get me beheaded on YouTube or something, I don't know. But it's not knowing what is exciting, but you've got to be prepared.
So talk through in a bit more detail all this kit that you've got to take with you. When you're doing this around the world trip, and you're going to be away for as long as you are, what are the most important things that you need to take with you? Well, let's start with you, first of all. You obviously need clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably you need some drink or some food or some emergency supplies, because there's not going to be a service station every few miles down the road, is there?
There certainly isn't, although, saying that, if you can't drive more than 20 or 30 miles in Africa before you'll find a little chap at the side of the road wanting to sell you petrol anyway. But so that's why
Can't drink petrol, though.
Well, I wish I could. Actually, it's probably more expensive than a pint of beer. But, no, I've got a lot of kit, so I'll need full protective equipment. Example, my huge boots that I'm just waggling in your face. And then all the off-road clothing, the stuff that's going to keep me warm in the Himalayas but cool enough in Kenya. Then I need tent, emergency food, something to cook the emergency food on, painkillers, antibiotics to prevent malaria, and if I get cut. I've taken some sewing kit so I can sew any lacerations up myself.
This is where being a doctor comes in handy.
It is a bit handy. I didn't mean to malign the long way round people, but they had a doctor following them round. I'm taking mine with me in the back of my head. So there's a lot of stuff. I can just about fit it all on. But
you must have done some serious modifications to fit all this stuff on.
Well, there's a wonderful gentleman from Ardcases who make bike luggage, and he's making me a custom set of panniers, extra large ones, that he's going to powder coat bright orange to.
Yeah.
So Humphrey will look the part, and so he's kindly making those for me. I've got a big box on that you can see on at the moment for carrying all the bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have a waterproof bag that sits behind me, so I've got a backrest so I can mooch along with my feet up whilst I head down the motorway, and a chair, a fold-out chair, so I've got somewhere to sit, because I don't have the youngest of spines, so I need somewhere to be able to relax for a sort of an hour or so a day.
Okay. Well, it's completely fascinating, and I'm glad I have what I've watched. You said it stole your thunder, but I have seen the show that we're talking about with Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor, so I know sort of roughly what you're going to be in for, and it's fascinating because you have a bit of an insight into what you can expect. But as you say, there is a lot of unexpected things that you're going to encounter as well.
That's the bit I'm excited about.
Well, it's good. You certainly come across as the sort of chap that likes an adventure, which is good. You wouldn't catch me doing this, but you pay me all the money in the world, and you wouldn't get me to do any of this. But I'd say, take my hat off to you for what you're trying to do. So, is there a sort of amount of money that you are hoping to raise?
Well, I hadn't really thought about this. My plan was as much as I can.
Right.
And then someone else asked me this question, put me on the spot, and just being able to think in big round numbers, I thought, 10 grand. No, that doesn't sound big enough. 100 grand. Don't know. Million. No, that's far too big. So I just plumped for 100 grand. So I want to raise as much as I can, and I'd like to get at least to six figures. Unfortunately, I possibly picked the worst possible time in my living memory for doing this.
Well, you say that, but Comet Relief and Children in Need still managed to muster up 20 or 30 million quid a time. I don't know where all that money comes from.
If you can get me Terry Wogan and 8 hours on BBC One on a Friday night, I reckon I'll do pretty well as well.
Oh, I'm surprised. Have you not tried to get your story picked up by any other national media?
It's a work in progress. I'm talking to some companies who are potentially interested in sponsoring the event, and if anyone's listening to this and they're interested, then you can always contact me through my website, www.tiggerstravels.org. Sorry for the plug.
That's fine. No, you plug away.
Thank you. You do have to be a bit of a sales, turn yourself into a bit of a salesman doing this. And it's a bit unpleasant being pushy, but you've got to, because you know the causes are worthwhile. And
Definitely.
So any pennies raised from private individuals go straight to the charities. All the equipment I've bought and paid for myself, because I've been doing extra locum shifts for getting two and a bit years now to get the money to sort of pay for some of the bike and all the kit. Any kit that gets donated by companies, say they can't offer me cash but will offer me a tent or something like that, will all be auctioned when I get back.
Okay.
So I won't end up with anything that I haven't paid for myself. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's right to, really.
No. Well, it's certainly another good way of making some money, and as it will have been around the world with you, it's going to be worth that bit more when it comes back.
Oh, well, thanks to you. Hopefully
it'll have a story
bit
attached to it.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be in photos and...
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, we keep us posted with your progress, won't you? I don't know whether we can sort of set up any way of getting in touch with your regular updates while you're going around there. If you manage to get some sort of contact, we'll have to chat about that. But it'll be good to keep up with you when you go away. And perhaps you pop back again before you go, beginning of next year or the end of this year, just to give us a final update of where you are and all these sorts of things. And it'd be good to talk to you again, because it is fascinating what you're doing. So people can donate now, presumably.
They can indeed. There's an online giving link on the website. So have a look. It gives you lots more information and some pictures of me and my gammy leg I got trying to do a publicity jump on the bike.
Oh,
and they can leave a message for me on the blog or follow me on Facebook or Twitter, which is just Tiggers Travels. And have a look and maybe donate. And if anyone has any ideas, they know anyone who could help or any advice, then just contact me through the contact page on the website.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Chris. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It's a fascinating topic, and best of luck with it.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Okay, it's 6:25. We're going to have a quick change around with guests, because we've got live music from the Jar Family and the New Music Generator coming up very soon.
Tim Willett.
Cambridge 105.
This is Cambridge 105.